This is CliffCentral.com.
The look on your face, Gord.
What?
Shawn Mendes, does that name mean anything
no.
to you? Nope.
Nope, and I'm proud of not knowing.
Camila Cabello, does that name mean
not
anything
a word.
To you?
Not a
you
thing.
Have no idea.
I wish them
are.
Well, though. If they're happy and married and nice people, then I wish them well. And that wasn't a horrible song. I've heard worse.
You probably
I'm just
know,
proud of not knowing who that is.
You probably know his songs, just not who well, sings them.
I'm sure. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
But those two that were on that track over there just came. So they've been dating for a while.
They're both already quite famous, high profile
yeah, no,
pop people.
Very, very famous. But they haven't admitted that they're actually dating until yesterday when a fan like asked, and Shawn Mendes just straight out said, like, we're in a relationship.
That's like the celebrity.
Did that change anything for you?
Yeah, I'm two celebrities who have popular people and make music that brings joy to people's lives, have found
somewhere,
each other
somehow,
and are forming a power couple.
Yes. Well,
good for them.
Good
and
morning.
As long as they're not like outright pusses, then let them be happy.
Did
that's
you,
it.
Did
I
you
just
see
don't
what,
care.
Did you see what Justin Bieber posted yesterday? He posted like a full page essay on how his just come out and like fought depression and how tough it was growing up as a child star,
talk about
where everything was handed to him and the pressure that was placed on him, and that it's important just to focus on yourself and to focus on God. I think the guy's done a full 180 from his bad boy stages where he was like doing drugs, and he like even admitted to his flaws.
Patience.
That's really cool. When someone admits to their flaws publicly and that they've worked through their flaws to correct themselves.
Yes, look, he can. I'm not being insensitive, but he can cry in his millions of dollars. That's all.
But at the end, like everybody, celebrity or not, etc., etc., money doesn't take away problems. I know they say, like, I'd rather do. What's
have
the expression?
You
I'd rather do
seen,
my crying in a Lamborghini.
That's
or
it. Have you ever seen a sad person
yeah,
on a jet ski?
So
man?
Obviously, like, a lot of the problems of life and a lot of the stresses of life are alleviated by having a shitload of money. I'm not denying that. My point is that money doesn't automatically equal better mental health.
So earlier on in the show, we were discussing how Albert Einstein went and he wrote a note for a bellboy. And on the note, he put down the equation to happiness. And it perfectly ties into how Justin Bieber's so rich but still unhappy, because the quote was, "A calm and modest life brings more happiness than the pursuit of success combined with constant relentlessness." So that proves Einstein's theory on happiness.
See, this is why I go yeah. back to a potential career path for me. I want to be a professional money spender.
Yeah, I also wouldn't mind finding out that I'm like the last heir, and not in a like scammy fishing scam kind of way. To just someone to come and tell me, look, dude, you're worth $200 million. So that's cool.
No.
I would be like, rad, I'm going to just always be traveling.
Gord, here's the thing for me. I don't want the hard work of that.
No,
if,
me neither.
If I, were
I want
to, find
to hand it to me on a silver platter, please.
If
and
I
want
to find out I have that money, great. But I want to be a professional money spender
yes,
for millionaires
but you need
and billionaires.
The, oh, you want to do it for other people?
Yes.
No.
I need to.
I hate shopping for me.
No, I need
let
to help
alone
them
shopping
out.
For someone else.
We need to figure out what's going on.
Okay,
but
you,
first,
can spend, you can help me spend my money when
it.
I find out that I'm like the lost earl of some
deal.
Ancient Scottish estate with a castle and millions of pounds.
Deal. See, to bring this all back to path, though, good morning, this is the Gareth Cliff Show. It's CN, Gord and Michael taking care of the show while Gareth is away. So we have a lot of things to discuss. We have some new stories to get into, and we'll also have an awesome guest stopping by in little. But before that, this is actually someone who just sent me this link, as opposed to, well, according to all of the food talk we were discussing earlier on in part one. South Africa, get this, Gord, particularly, South Africa is the sixth most diet-obsessed country in the world.
Oh, I don't know how they measure that, but that's interesting.
I was surprised to hear this. Well, listen.
Probably spoke to Tim
in
Knows.
The world.
In the world. This is how. According to a recent study, South Africa is the sixth most diet-obsessed country in the world. At least this is according to Chef's Pencil. It's an Australian website for chefs and cooks. So they all band up together. They've analyzed Google Trends and data. They've analyzed what we search on the topic of diet and nutrition. And that was what was used to come up with the list, as Google provided a country and a city score showing the local interest level for diet-related searches. So I'm very surprised by this. The countries which actually made the rest of the top six were Poland, which score of 100, followed by Australia, which got 83, the US, which got 78, New Zealand, and then New Zealand, who got 77, and then South Africa, which got 76.
I don't want to be skeptical for the sake of it, but I would like to see the sample size and the methodology for this study, because it sounds like some bullshit. That's like very per official. Capita, can that really be the case? That I don't know. Poland? I just want to see how many people they interviewed and in what ways. Because it's like, I've had this little rant before, and to the person that didn't care about my tomato problems, this is not the show for you, unfortunately. tune in next week where, well, I'll just be me still. But I hate like when they have like the coffee elections. Like I've got a vendetta, a personal vendetta against, purely my opinion, against Truth Coffee in Cape Town because of terrible experiences I've had there. And yet every year they're voted the best coffee shop in the world.
Yeah.
But I've never been invited to vote in the coffee elections. So like that's the same thing as like having your website, which has 3,000 total readers, vote on who's the best of something, and then 240 people vote, and it's like declared world's but best to me it, underwear shop.
To me, it gives it a little more clout if they're looking at Google searches and what the internet
and
says.
And that was where you actually caught me, and I was like, that's pretty interesting. Like, I just find it kind of hard to believe, given the fact that like the internet access statistics we have in South Africa and like the disparity between how much data people have versus their income. It raises an eyebrow. I'm not going to like bin it without further investigation, but I'm like, I want to know the methodology of this study and a little bit more before I accept that Poland is first, Australia second, United States third, New Zealand fourth, and what were we, sixth?
Yeah.
It just also seems like culturally, like there's a lot of similarities between Australians, New Zealanders, and South Africans. It just feels a little too close for comfort that they all made the top six.
Yeah,
and I didn't expect America to be on that list.
Why
aren't they the most like obese? One of the top.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's going to cause you to become pretty obsessed with diet.
Yeah,
people in a constant cycle of trying and failing
some sort of
weight. Most obese people do fairly regularly try and get their shit together. They just either don't believe they can or in a cycle of like failure and relapse.
So let's get into some more news stories. Michael, you actually have something interesting to bring up about Elon Musk and Jack Ma.
So
what have they been doing?
I am totally obsessed with Elon Musk and Jack Ma. I think they are geniuses, but they are the most bipolar geniuses
what
around.
What do you mean by that?
So one will say yes, and you automatically know the other one will say no. So a company paid them to go and basically do a little summit where they debate topics. They literally sit side by side. It's not even the audience asking them questions. They'd see a screen so it would read out making humans multiplanetary, and one of them would kick off the discussion and the other one would automatically disagree with them. Right. So I thought it might be cool if we bring up one or two of the topics and see how we disagree or agree on them.
I love Elon Musk.
Let's just hear first a bit of some of their debates. So this is Elon Musk and Jack Ma. By the way, to just be a fly on that, like fly on that wall to figure out.
Flies don't hear in the same way as humans. They don't have auditory nerves. They can't process the information they would be hearing.
To be a fly on the wall before they went out on stage. Like, what do billionaires discuss casually?
I wonder who was intimidated by who, because personally, Elon Musk is an absolute genius. But now Jack Ma is about 40 times richer than Elon Musk.
This is them discussing just the difference between humans and computers. This is a bit of it.
Computers actually are already much smarter than people on so many dimensions. We just keep moving the goalposts. So we used to think, like, for example, being good at chess was an example of a smart human. And then Kasparov was crushed by Deep Blue in 97. That was a long time ago. 22 years. I mean, right now your cell phone could crush the world champion at chess, literally. Go used to be thought of as something that humans were better at than computers. Then Lisa Dahl was beaten 4-1 by AlphaZero. Then a new version of AlphaZero, AlphaGo. AlphaGo beat Lisa Dahl 4-1. Then there's AlphaZero. AlphaZero crushed AlphaGo 100-0. Now it's just pointless because it just keeps playing itself. Humans are trying to play a computer Go is like trying to fight Zeus. It's not going to work. Hopeless. We are hopeless hopelessly inadequate. In terms of rendering, basically, there's just a smaller and smaller corner of intellectual pursuits that humans are better than computers, and that every year it gets smaller and smaller, and soon we will be far, far surpassed in every single way, guaranteed. 100%. Okay. Or civilization will end. Those are the two possibilities.
Okay. Yeah, my view is that computer may be clever, but human beings are much smarter.
Yeah, definitely not.
Clever is
yeah, definitely
academic,
not.
Is knowledge-driven. Smarter is experience-driven. Computer is smart, is clever, but it's human being. We invented a computer. I never see a computer invented a human being.
So, okay. To give you a brief like synopsis, basically the topic was AI.
Synopsis.
Synopsis, like a brief description of what happened. Or
a synopsis?
Yes. Have you never heard synopsis?
It's like a synonym for summary.
Synopsis.
It's a synonym for summary.
Sorry. That caught me so off guard. Okay. It's a synopsis.
Synopsis. Wait, what did I say?
Synopsis.
Oh, okay.
You also call Elon Musk Elon Musk.
Elon Musk. I also say pizza and vodka wrong, apparently. So the topic...
Pizza is a very Durban / New Zealand one.
I was trying not to pick it up, Michael. I'm sorry. I tried, but I just couldn't. Yes.
Okay, we're listening to your synopsis of the summary of the story.
So it was AI's threat to jobs. And basically, Elon Musk is saying that AI is a threat to humankind because... The rate of information that gets passed and taken in by AI is much faster than that of the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we'll get to a stage where AI sees a human as like the slowest thing possible. We're not even moving or talking because it's processing so fast.
Yeah.
But then Jack Ma's debating that, no, that won't happen. What humankind will do is we'll actually use AI to better understand ourselves. Mm. So we'll use AI technology to know why humans feel a certain way and act a certain way. So I love how they disagree on the two topics, but do you guys think that AI is a threat to jobs?
I think a threat is not necessarily the way to look at it. Now, I understand this does very little to console the person whose job is manually assembling something, or, you know, like, but it is the turning wheel of civilization. Like, when the locomotive engine and the steel pressing plant and the Industrial Revolution started, like, by definition, people whose jobs had been the same for either like their whole life or even generations were like being replaced by far more efficient machines. But in their wake, they then created whole lots of new industries for people to work in. So people have got this idea that like AI is automatically going to automate all things, and all poorer people who depended on being part of that process are going to be now even more poor with nothing to do. Mm. And the people who own the AI systems are going to become even wealthier. And it's just going to be like, it's just another ongoing process of automation. Like, there's a lot of people, we don't cry for the Blockbuster videos and the Kodaks of the world that were defeated by the internet and by like better digital cameras and that kind of thing. And a lot of people did lose their jobs, but for every person that lost their job being the manager of a Blockbuster, there's another person who's got a job being a person that fixes your fiber when you know, like an IT professional. Yeah. So it will cause a lot of upgrading of processes that rely on where humans are the weakest link, where humans are the clunky part of the process. But there are going to be new opportunities. Like, now a social media manager is a relatively respectable job that people, not just like the 20-year-old intern from the ad agency who cares about social media a little bit much, gets lumped with that junior job in advertising. Mm. Now it's like a department in your ad agency, and the people that are the experts of it are taken seriously and seen as a major part of the advertising mix. That job's only existed commonly for 4 or 5 years, and at all for less than 10 years. 10 years ago, there was no such thing.
Yeah.
So, or maybe like 11 or 12 years ago. But a decade or so ago, there was no such thing as a social media manager. Now there's lots of them, and the senior ones are considered senior people in ad agencies. And so that's the kind of trend that will continue to happen. As AI makes certain processes and jobs obsolete, which will horribly impact other people, it's going to open opportunity like for like artists that can collaborate in the 3D space across continents and, like, you know, make music together regardless of proximity, all of these kind of opportunities that will arise, we can't yet fathom. You couldn't fathom when they were building the first, laying the first train tracks across vast spans of land, that it was going to lead to globalization, global trade, have all these positive and negative benefits and disadvantages. It is essentially going to change the world. Just defeating job opportunity for all humankind is narrow-minded.
Look, this reminds me of something, and I want to throw forward to it. It's currently the World Economic Forum Africa's kicking off today, actually. It will be taking place in Cape Town on the 4th and the 5th and the 6th of September. And CliffCentral.com is working with APSA in being able to hone in on some of the conversations that will be happening there. Look, definitely AI, looking at future trends, how we can equip ourselves. That's all part of what will be happening at the World Economic Forum. And so we will be releasing three special edition podcasts from 8 a.m. this morning, as Gareth was talking to some key players who are involved in the World Economic Forum and partnering with APSA, and to just have conversations that are looking towards the future. So this morning at 8, kicking off with a very interesting conversation. I say interesting for lack of a better term, because, yeah, you really do want to take notes and learn with this one. Gareth interviewed Leah Besser. Now, she is all about food security and food technology in an innovative way. So with the fourth industrial revolution really being one of the major buzzwords currently, and not just because, you know, we are moving towards the future, but we're all trying to find new ways to sustain ourselves and actually the planet. Leah Besser has come in with a brilliant way of using technology and innovation to take us forward. Are you ready to hear what she does?
Yes.
Are you? Because, look, I had to sit through this interview and I thought, whoa, what is going on? But by the end of it, I actually thought this is a neat idea. Leah Besser and her team at Gourmet Grub down in Cape Town study food science, and she is pushing how insects could be our savior when it comes to food in the future.
Nah, I'm good, eh? I don't think I'm ready to eat insects.
That lady, that very interesting lady whose name I've forgotten, who's like a British lady of I think Sri Lankan descent.
Nadia, she's Sri Lankan descent.
And she went on this like food tour of like the whole of Asia, trying to find the weirdest and most wonderful stuff. And she also reckoned that like the bug restaurant she found somewhere on her travels was surprisingly good.
Look,
I am going to seriously struggle to eat a cricket, but it is what you are raised with that makes things either weird or normal.
So this like, is also a good
haggis
point.
And tripe are kind of similar, and they occur in like the whitest and the least white parts of the world. Like some cultures just dig to eat the stomach, and it's like, for me, that's pretty gross. But it seems like it's like, if it's what you're culturally raised with, either in Scotland or in South Africa, it's normal to you. Like I can't. You know, I don't want to get into my personal food preferences, but there are certain things
you
I just can't.
There's just certain
stuff that weirds me out that doesn't weird other people out.
Yeah,
like eating like brain or, you know, eyeball,
testicles,
or even oysters, just because of how they look, freaks me out. The point is, like, what's completely normal to one person and what's utterly like inconceivable to another person is probably at least 50%, maybe more, a matter of like upbringing and exposure and culture, and the other 50 or less percent is like personal preference.
Yeah. Well, this is, I think then you even need to take a listen to this, Gord, at 8, because Leah debunks all of that. She's not serving, you know, caterpillars on a plate, but she infuses insects into a lot of common foods.
Don't infuse insects into my food! Infuse insects. It's a fucking roach-infused pina colada.
She even makes insect ice cream. Yeah,
No. Hey, but, look, if people dig it, more power to them. If this lady's like living her best life, then all good. O's must go if it interests you. I'm not trying to like crush her hopes and dreams and convince people that we're thinking of trying it not to try it.
Yeah.
But don't bring that stuff near me.
When I was a little kid watching a movie, I thought and I knew at that stage, and I still feel this way, that I saw what the future of food looks like.
Yeah,
I was watching Spy Kids, and basically the one kid, they were on like a boat or something, and the one kid wanted a Big Mac, so his sister passed him this little like ball, like a marble,
yeah,
and all he had to do was put the marble in the microwave. Basically, it was like a condensed Big Mac meal where all like the moisture had been sucked out, etc. And he put it in the microwave, and this little ball literally expanded into an entire Big Mac meal with chips and Coke. And look, that is the future of food.
I saw something on like something that was like bouncing around the internet, but a few years ago already. Like, this must be more than 5 years ago that I saw this. But they're like, some dude had this like kit that they sell somewhere in Asia, like where it's everything is like dehydrated and compressed, and like you have to microwave your roll in a certain way, and then like it just, I don't know how to explain it other than like it looked like tiny little mini food, and you had to like rehydrate everything, and then you ended up with this possible cheeseburger that sort of resembled a McDonald's cheeseburger. Like, it was a cheeseburger, but it was a pretty basic cheeseburger. But I wish I could remember like what keywords and stuff to search, because it was fascinating, because it was exactly what you're just describing. Not one single marble that then turns into the whole burger, but like little components.
Yeah, all the moisture's pulled out. Think about how accessible it is now. It's easy to carry. You can now store it for months because
but yes, it's the processedness levels. And the like, eating the odd processed chow, like if you haven't got a weight problem like me, like if you're just a normal living life, like it's a jewel and it's nice as a treat, whatever. But you don't want to make processed food fat, thin, just as a health principle in general. Like, don't make processed food the bulk of your dietary intake.
Like, I want to see where this is going. And I think, yeah, these are some of the conversations that are necessary in moving us forward. So let's see. Give it a listen with an open mind.
And no, I'm down. I don't want insect-infused ice cream.
Let's go with it. But yeah, these are all conversations to today, tomorrow, and on Friday at 8 o'clock. These are special edition podcasts that Gareth recorded that we'll be releasing in collaboration with the World Economic Forum Africa and also APSA. If you want more information on World Economic Forum, it opens today and will bring together 1,100 leaders from government, business, civil society, and actually including 10 different heads of states or government. And the conference will highlight the need to improve the funding and regulatory environments for startups, the development of new partnerships for reskilling and upskilling workers, and how to leverage the new African Continental Free Trade Agreement to drive regional integration. So it's a good one to make note of. Yeah, that's kicking off at 8 a.m. So nearly time to bring in our guest, but I just want to say this is I really am excited to get into this conversation, because Lord knows it's necessary. I think we hear great, you know, themes like women empowerment, and it's very important, and yes, Women's Month, and we'll just hashtag, but how do we make that stay longer? How do we pack a punch to saying, actually, we want to make a difference for women, let's all band up together and make positive change? Well, we have someone in who's making that sort of change, and we'll definitely discuss that. So her name is Katie Mohammed, and she's launched an initiative called the W Suite Summit. She'll be chatting more about that and why it's very important to just carry on talking about the importance of women empowerment more than just a month, right? Yeah, let's get into that. This is the Gareth Cliff Show.
This is CliffCentral.com.
We have our guest joining us now. Her name is Katie Mohammed. She's all about making proper impact with the W Suite Summit. We've been having conversations with different guests this week, and I think I've been saying the similar things over and over again. If we were to be here and read over their whole CV, we'd be here for a very long time this morning. So Katie, I won't do that, and rather just say thank you so much for coming through.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. The new look, Gareth Cliff.
Great.
You think it's an upgrade?
Okay. Josiah is looking fabulous this morning.
Gord, do you still...
With your shorts on.
Is that shorts or pajamas?
They're short shorts, and I'm all for it. If I could pull it off, I would.
Katie, I think, you know, my outfit this morning is just half summer, half winter, but we're getting there. A hoodie and shorts, but anyway.
Short shorts. And them legs.
They're short. Okay, that's enough. Let's end it there.
Moving along.
Yes. It's spring.
And I'm springing into action here. Katie, I really did want to chat to you this morning because I think, my goodness, what a week to have you in, actually, and what a week to chat about the longevity of women empowerment. That's not just a buzzword. That's not just a hashtag. That's not something just to look cool on Instagram. But let's talk proper empowerment. Let's talk proper impact this morning. But before we get started into all of those nitty-gritties, how would you encapsulate your background?
Well, I started as a fashion designer because I thought that, making clothes would make me feel fabulous. Then I realized a couple of years after that, it's not what I wanted to do. So I got into marketing, and that's, it actually kind of found me. And then, you know, my first job was actually a community radio station.
Okay.
Know? Again, having a talk show in a community radio station.
You were on the microphone, not behind the scenes.
No, I was on the microphone.
Oh, cool.
Kind of found me, you know, in Durban, a community radio station. And I realized that I just love to talk.
Mm.
You know, my dad told me that at 5 years old to shut up. But
yeah, sometimes you have to embrace it as well.
And then I decided, you know, yeah, this is what I want.
Just go with it, yeah.
Yeah. So most of my life I spent in broadcasting. I spent, of course, you know, public broadcaster, one of the best institutions in the world to get the knowledge that we needed from a broadcasting perspective. So I started in radio, went on to television,
mm-hmm.
and of course started, you know, selling radio and television and you know, sponsorships and eventually, you know, got into the production side of all of that. So that's where my
And there's a huge art form to that. Like it's a business and an art form, like media buying and media planning and that kind of stuff. It's not easy.
Mm. Yeah. So that's how I started.
It's like a high-pressure-ass job, that is the point I'm making.
Look, I was bringing money for the broadcaster. So I was like, you know, the one of the single most important people at the broadcaster at that time. And I think for me, when I got into the content side of it, that was the most important thing, was I wanted to talk about stuff. And then I got into, you know, hosting and producing my own talk show with, you know, fellow colleagues like Basisani Kumalo, Carol Bauer. And again, it's talking about real issues as women. And I think that's where it all kind of started. How could we engage and have dialogues about our issues? And then left the broadcast about 10 years ago, and then a budding entrepreneur and winging it as I go along.
Look, you're more than winging it. You're doing amazing things. But, you know, there's something interesting to be said and noted about when someone goes through a bit of a shift in what they do, when they realize that they're working and, you know, they're successful and they've achieved great things. But that shift happens when you note as well that you could then be doing a positive ripple effect for more people. So for you, when did that shift happen, when you wanted to make more of an impact in other people's lives using what you know and your career?
You know, I've often wondered that as you get older, what is your purpose in life? Now, that's the single most important thing. And I think, you know, I'm much older than most of you, but
I mean, you're 12.
Seriously, Dacha, even as old as me, let alone older.
No. I'll surprise you just
now. Okay, we'll talk about it off air, but I'm 38. And if you're older than me, you're not much older than me.
Yeah, well, let's, you know, I have a 28-year-old daughter, so let's just...
Okay, that, I find... Okay. This is for off-air.
So,
but I am fascinated by
thank
this.
Thank you. But I think when you start, as you get older, you start having your purpose and you start wanting to live your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a visionary, you know, traditional Muslim girl, but a visionary, a man that was so liberal in his thinking. And he's always said to me is that you will only find comfort in your soul when you find your purpose. And as I got later, and as I had children, and I, you know, later in my life, and I thought, what would be this purpose? And my purpose was always, how do I take people along my journey?
Mm-hmm.
And last year, you know, I went to the presidential summit, the investment summit, and in Sandton, and that was when we had a new president, and it was this reigniting of this new
dawn.
And you had hordes of people that come to a summit, and kind of commit to this investment in this country, and you look around, and you like, you probably know most of them. You've read about them, you follow them, economists, chair people of corporates, and there's like 800 people, they're all excited about this commitment. 600 were men,
mm-hmm.
of which probably 400 were white over the age of 60. And you realize this economy has got to change. Someone's got to change the narrative of this economy. The 200 women that were there, I probably knew most of them over the age of 60, the same old CEO of a listed company, this, that, the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, where is the future generation of women leadership? So yes, as a woman in her 40s, I found that I don't feel that there were women that were there that could take me along my journey. But it doesn't mean that I can't do that for other women. I had to fight my way through it. Number one, I come from apartheid. I come from all of that. So it was a lot of challenges. So I looked around and I'm like, I have got to change the narrative. I've got to be part of changing the narrative of this country.
Mm.
And I thought, how could we create a strong female economy? created the movement called the W Suite, which is from the C Suite, which is women leading. But also W is we, which is, as women, we cannot do this on our own. We cannot do this on our own.
Yeah.
We have to do this with the men around our around the table. So eventually got into...
Don't you think there's some people going to be massively offended to hear that?
Well, that's all right, because I know that I have my opportunities that have been created are with the men that have...
So you have to collaborate.
Have to
You
collaborate.
Can't operate in isolation.
Absolutely not.
Not to say that a woman can't succeed without a man. You're just saying that's the environment you're operating in and it calls for collaboration.
We can do this together.
Yeah,
so
I agree with that.
We're creating a strong female economy because we're going to create a great nation. Listen, let's be honest. As women, we lead the most amazing thing. And when I had this launch, it was at the time where the Prime Minister of New Zealand actually addressed her nation with the real issue at hand. And the way she addressed the Terrorism Act in New Zealand at the time said the difference about sometimes the way a man leads and the way a woman leads. You know, we don't have to be aggressive. Yeah. And for me, stood my ground and said, yes, as women leaders, we live with authenticity. And for me, that stood out of how she led a nation through a crisis.
There's a certain, and I mean, you got to triple think before you allowed to say anything in these topics because someone could take it the wrong way and get offended. But I get really upset sometimes about the prevalence of identity politics and outrage culture versus actually doing anything. So it sounds sometimes like I'm sort of triggered, for lack of a better word, by these issues, but I'm not. I don't think people deal with things in a proactive way. But I have firmly held the belief for a long time that we need more like massively senior, if not most senior, leaders should be women. Like, there's a certain level-headedness with which a woman's doesn't have an adrenaline and a testosterone. Not fight and have a bigger penis anytime there's any kind of conflict.
True.
I can imagine like a woman being less likely to fire the nukes and more likely to be like, cool, well, let's actually have a conversation. You know, I would rather have the majority of presidents, with exceptions, be women than what it is today, where the vast majority are men and there's a handful of female presidents and prime ministers here and there.
Well, that's great thinking. And that's forward thinking. Mm. And if companies and individuals are forward thinking, I mean, you know, gender equality is a global it's a global crisis.
Yeah.
We are not equal, let's be honest. I mean, we talk about brown people not being equal, but as women, we're just not equal in the workplace. We're not equal. We do not have the same opportunities. We don't play golf. So, well, most of us don't play golf. So a lot of the contracts.
But you can if you want.
Well, we can if we want. Well, the sun is too much for me.
There we go, Katie.
Well, I don't like golf either. So if that's where the big contracts are being negotiated, they're being negotiated without me too. Yeah.
And it is a boys' club, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's a global issue. It is a boys' club. But I always say, in saying that it is a boys' club, how can we as women, I mean, as brown girls, we have this stigma of pull her down syndrome, the PhD syndrome, that we want to be the only queen in the room. And I often say that I've never been privy to that with women around me. It's because I collect the good people around me.
Mm.
So it's about who you hang out with, the inspired people that you hang out with, who's going to motivate you. So we need to break that stigma of the pull her down, the competition versus collaboration.
And you mean specifically within circles of women?
Yes, I'm talking specifically in circle of women. Because I personally look around and I look at the men around me and how amazing they work together. And yes, you know, they have issues, they don't get on, you know, they're probably busted out and they move on.
Yeah.
They take their emotions out of it. We are very emotional beings and sometimes it works to our detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me is I always stand my ground is it's called the power of the pack. If we start going as a pack, men and women, we have this agenda of this equality, we will be bigger and better.
Well, you talk about, you know, the new PhD pull it down syndrome, but what are some of the other issues that you feel are important to you in making strides in women empowerment?
It's definitely you know, pulling up a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. So if I have a seat at the table, I need to pull up...
Because that was the theme of the launch.
Yeah,
this year.
To pull up a seat for other women. And if there aren't seats, pull up an extra chair. And if there isn't a chair, just find a corner and we all sit around. And I think that's the most important thing is some of us are equally lucky to have a seat at the table because we are vocal, we kind of aggressive, we kind of stalk people on DM, you know, we slide into DMs.
Well, yeah, I work for a lot of ad agencies and some major companies and I can't mention any of the by name any of the parties involved, but I was working with a really large agency, presenting to one of their clients who was a really massive national institution, a bit of a bureaucracy, lots of money. And in the presentation, more and more ad agencies are aware, especially when dealing with their really big, you know, blue chip clients, of who goes into the room to present. So you might have had work done by a team of two people, but they'll go in and present with six or seven and try and get a nice like mix of diversity to just like go in with a mixed team, yeah, for the purposes of like display. Mm-hmm. You know, literally like we need a brown person for this meeting. Like, who's got time today? Mm. Just come in and drink coffee and smile. And that's fairly commonplace, but they'd gone to great pains to like make this presentation as representative as possible. And 2 minutes into the conversation, the head of this massive organization, who's a woman, was like, "Where are the women? Why am I presenting to five guys and a woman? Where are the rest of the women?" And everyone was like, "Oh," like they tried to tick all the boxes, yes, but didn't think
they
like
didn't get it right.
It should be a mix of genders as well as ethnicities and ages and all the rest. So, you know, this senior woman in charge of the client very much was trying to clearly do what you were doing. So,
and I think that's important, is because she's leading like a woman. Mm. And that's exactly what W Suite is about, is how do we lead like women? And you would see that on my t-shirt. It says lead like women, but women is inclusive of men, you know, as well.
Oh, it says that.
lead like women.
Oh, I see.
Gord.
Stop it.
I'm not being sketchy. It's written across your chest, but your jacket is closed, is covering.
Okay, there you go.
I just tried to read it. I
think it's a three-word phrase. Said, yes, okay.
But it's
lead
written
like
in a,
women.
Yes.
He's trying to see how it's here. Yeah, anyway.
You can't tell me to read your shirt.
It's an uncensored show. It's okay.
I can't really read it, and I'm in trouble.
What's your vision with W Suite? What would you like to see it become and do?
So my vision is really to create a platform for advocacy and action. So you would see that we had the most amazing summit in Women's Month, and what are the outcomes is what we're following up with. You know, we had the most amazing debate where I had men and women talk to each other. And that's where we found the real issues that we have as men and women. Had people like Andile Kumalo, who actually even wrote an article about this, is how do we have this redistribution of wealth and power? We had Greg Maloka, we had Ashraf Garda, Dave Tiltman, talk to Varashni, Farah Fortune, debate these issues that you guys are an important part of this. We are not saying that you need to kind of open the doors. It's take us with you. We'll take you with us, but you take us with. And from there, one of the most outcomes, of course, was the sexual harassment. It was a huge issue that we, especially as entrepreneurs, especially women in the C-suite or the W-suite, as we call it, huge issue. And these are the issues, if we do not have a dialogue, I always say it's about time that we start to name and shame these people. Because sexual harassment in the workplace is the most,
like, I don't disagree at all. I'm just saying that we need to remember there's a correlatory other side of that coin where the threat of an accusation makes people guilty until proven innocent. And so there needs to be a naming and shaming culture, and there needs to be a culture of you can no longer get away with this shit.
Totally.
But there also needs to be a way that it's like, look, you can't destroy somebody's life. You can't, I mean, I'm sure there's been more than one occasion where it's like, do what I say, or, you know, in a weird, creepy way, do what I say, or this isn't going to go the way you want it. But I'm sure there's been the opposite, where it's like, do what I say, or else I'm going to just make a massive accusation.
Exactly.
And it's going to like smear your reputation forever regardless.
Look, it's technicalities, and we need to always, as women as well, when people do talk about these issues, you need proof for these things.
I'm all for naming and shaming, but I'm against lynching in real life and on social media.
No, I do hear that.
And it only takes one accusation for someone to get lynched and forever be remembered as that
no,
way.
No, that's
so yeah,
true.
Absolutely. Yeah. There need to be consequences, but there also needs to be,
you know, as women of color, we've always said that these issues are amongst our community, because we find, you know, brown men do exactly the same. And I sat around with one of my white friends a few weeks ago, and she said, let me tell you something. As a white girl, I have the very same issue. But the issue turns around, and the white senior manager says, well, let me see where your white skin takes you in this country. So it becomes a he said, she said. But something like that, you know, she's my friend. She will not lie about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure.
So it is something that you take it back and you're like, oh my God, it's not an issue, a brown girl issue. It is actually an issue for women. And how do we actually start, you know, challenging the men that are doing this?
Yeah.
So you know, in saying that, the W Suite is really about a very outcome-driven. And how do we take this? I know you spoke about Jack Ma. I was also privileged to meet Jack Ma at the summit, the President's Summit. Mm-hmm. The one thing that stood out about Jack Ma is that he said your entrepreneurs are your country's heroes, and for me W Suite is also very committed to ensure that the seats are pulled up for women in entrepreneurship, which is the biggest thing. So you would see that in Entrepreneurship Week this year, one of the biggest outcomes was mentorship. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of women that want to mentor, and men, and there are a lot of mentees. So one of the biggest outcomes that we're taking from W Suite is also mentorship, is how do we continue the conversations and have these serious dialogues about women leading in their corporate spaces as entrepreneurs.
There are a lot of companies now that I've seen globally. I mean, a lot more have to follow suit, and they do have to start doing it in South Africa. They're alleviating the gender pay gap. So
I don't know. Sorry to interrupt, but see, you call me out.
Follow suit.
Please continue, everyone. I just wanted to go on the record with a complaint about Sia's joke. Please continue.
So one thing that I have read about is that Uber has basically eliminated the gender pay gap by not making it male or female, but more a metrics based on your qualifications and work experience, etc. So they fully alleviated that. There was the small little percentile which someone researched whereby there was a slight variance in gender pay with regards to only the drivers, because they did a study where they found that the male drivers were driving faster than the female drivers. And over time, that did increase their monthly salary because they were getting more jobs done in shorter spaces of time. But I do believe that companies should start implementing a matrix which isn't based on your gender, but rather based on your work experience as well as your qualifications.
Well, the levels, I would not agree. the playing fields are not leveled as yet. So we've got to catch up. As brown people, we've got 25 years only that we've got to catch up. So as women, we still have to catch up. So for me, countries like Scandinavian countries are now saying it is illegal for men and women to be paid what's the word?
Differently.
Yeah. Or inequitably. Well, because inequitably. You're going to have other factors than gender, like seniority.
Yes.
And when I say seniority, I mean like level of experience. Yeah.
If we do not put this in place for now, we are not going to get. We are still going to get. Like men are still going to outshine us because of they can drive faster and besides.
Well, they can't necessarily. I mean, there have been women Formula One drivers. Yes, it's just that there's not much of a culture of little girls being taken to the go-kart track.
As well as there's not a culture of a lot of women in the science, as an example.
Yeah.
So we have to put things in places and policies in places to drive this agenda, because it's a global agenda. So for me, without unapologetically, it is how do we get women standing out in most in companies, in corporate, in government. So I would say that. For me, some companies or some countries are not going to get to where we need to be with the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030 if we do not put these policies in place.
Well, what is the process to getting a policy put in place, but in government, that gender equality in workplaces with regards to pay or something like that? What is the process?
Well, the policies are there, that there has to be a percentage of women, there has to be a percentage of brown. I mean, that's what BEE is there for at the moment. So the policies are there, and it's becoming a tick box in certain industries at the moment. It's just a tick box. But what we're saying is, from a women leadership perspective, you talk about agency. Let's be honest with agencies. It's you go from agency to agency to agency to agency. I've barely seen women that went up the ranks within the agencies.
Yeah, you get some fantastic ECDs. Executive creative directors are typically like the head of the whole creative department. It's one of the most senior positions in an ad agency. It's kind of head of creative. You'll have like an MD, head of business. There are some like really, really talented women ones that have made huge, huge impacts. Sanjay Frolic, your Jenny Glovers, those kind of characters. But it's one in 10, one in 20 even. You will meet the ECD and you have a 5% chance of it being a woman, maybe.
So as an example, the advertising industry is still, you know, very white male in there. And we need to. In fact, if we do not make a noise about it, mm-hmm. if we don't have a dialogue.
Well, that is one industry where it's being made a noise and there's been a dialogue. Because I've seen the efforts that especially the larger agencies have gone to in the last 5 years. And the previous 5 years, but it goes on a curve, you know, exponentially more. It is very, very difficult to employ non-equitably, which can actually become a real problem because you find businesses finding ways around it. You know, like I won't mention any names, but I need to be BEE compliant to do some work for one of my clients that I've been working on for years and years and years. And the solution now from the client side is to have one of their BEE compliant people bill on my behalf, and then they put a markup on what I do. So essentially, I'm still doing the same work. A incidentally brown person is going to get 5% for nothing, and the company in question is just going to spend a little bit extra on the white person.
Just because they're tick boxing, yeah, the fact exactly. that they're using a BEE.
So it's like, well, what is the point of this? You know, we've agreed.
Because
need
it needs to be authentic.
One.
You know, BEE needs to be authentic.
Exactly.
You need to grow
but
a brown person.
But I see a lot more.
You.
Professionals coming up, like I see a lot more like diversity in the new hires, the young people, as well as in the more senior positions. And I can tell you for 100% sure, like a rugby stadium has over the last 5 years shown a real change in the kind of demographics of who you'll find there. An agency looks very different now than it would have looked 7, 8, 10 years ago,
exactly.
And in a good way.
Yeah.
So
and
despite the fact
efforts.
That you've got the kind of like. Tick boxing, as you call it, of me now having to bill through someone else. You also get like agencies where if you time traveled someone from 10 years ago that worked in agencies and dropped them in an agency and said, this is what the average agency looked like, they would immediately be like, wow, it's way more diverse.
Yeah,
so I think there's both. There's tick boxing and there's real progress.
Yeah, because skills development is important. We need to take each other along the journey.
Yeah.
How do females and backers get involved in W Suite Summit?
So basically, our website, you know, you register on the website. It's very sector specific. So you will have marketing, you'll have agriculture, you'll have mining. So we're becoming part of a community. So as soon as we have dialogues, as soon as we have opportunities, we engage with people on our database and say, you know, in Gauteng, would you be keen to come and join us for a dialogue? That's what we do. So we're building a community of women and men where we actually can have conversations and create a platform for change. So wsuite.co.za and follow us on our social media, WSuiteZA.
This is what I love, and call me naive if you will, but I really do believe that we are in a watershed moment. Whatever's happening right now, as horrible as some people might deem it to be, as nauseating as it might be to see another hashtag going around and trending, but I think we're in a watershed moment. What will come out of it depends on what we do right now. You know, I look at these slight nuances and differences just between my sisters and my mother to hear how whatever happens at work that my sisters are unhappy with, they do not even hesitate to go up and go and speak to someone about it, as opposed to sometimes my mom would go like, are you sure? Do you want to do that? And I think that is the type of difference. That is the type of positive change we're striving towards. Is it happening as quickly as we'd like to? Possibly not. But is it something that we should keep in mind to keep us going on some more? Definitely. And I think whether it is a hashtag that's overused, the idea though has to be this same, which is let's think about change, let's actually do the work towards that change, and let's just keep on going in that way. And I think, Katie, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think that we don't have women need to have safe spaces, and I think we don't have safe spaces to have these conversations, because not everybody can be as vocal as I am to call you out on ABCDE. Some women, you know, I need this job and so I think for me it's really creating safe spaces for women to talk about their issues or the challenges that they face. The one thing I'd like to say is that, you know, the one hashtag about men are trash, I don't support. Mm-hmm. As a mum of a 16-year-old, I cannot go and say to my son that you are trash or your dad is trash, or we need to get this right together. Men need to stand together and call out the other guys that are doing inappropriate thing. So for me, there are certain hashtags that work for some people, but I don't believe that like random hashtags like men are trash, you know, work for me as an individual, because not all men are trash. I can't call my brother, my son that. And we as women and men are creating the future generations, which are inclusive of men. So how do we create the younger boys, when they grow up, not to treat women inappropriately. That is what our focus should be as
Right. And this was touched on earlier, like you know, we were suggesting about martial arts classes and self-defense just being good for people in general, but not as a solution to the base problem. Like, it's an empowering thing as a man or a woman to be able to defend yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And it's seen as a men's domain. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like we're saying, there's women Formula One drivers, but not a lot of women, little girl go-kart racers. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing is applicable, but it's the source of the problem. And like you say, I agree. It comes from literally how people are raised.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the perfect point to leave it on. Nushka says, I'm loving this conversation. I was recently promoted in an executive role in a male-dominated industry.
Go, Nushka. Congratulations.
Go, Nushka. Yay. Well done. Lead like women.
It's tough out here trying to break through as a brown girl. And she says, where can I get the t-shirt, please?
Well, email us, WSuite, become a member, and you can wear the t-shirt.
There we go. So that's www.wsuite.co.za. Katie Mohammed, thank you so much for stopping by.
It's a pleasure.
This
thank you,
very,
guys.
Very, very awesome. This has been the Gareth Cliff Show. Gord, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening and being part of the conversation.
And thank you, Sia, for leading from the front, adding fabulosity for your little shorts.
And I'll send some t-shirts. Maybe you guys can wear them.
Sunshiny, wonderful personality that we love.
There we go. Well, thank you. And as I did say a little earlier, WEF Africa is currently taking place. It's kicking off today, the 4th of September, going off until Friday. And Gareth recorded some conversations with key stakeholders around the conversations that will be taking place in Cape Town this week. So kicking off with Leah Bessie. This is CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.